The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Yes, it is, and welcome back as we head into hour two of our daily three-hour tour. It is a privilege for me to bring back to the show one of my favorite scholars, really one of my favorite people. It's been a while. I only hesitate to have him on because I'm worried that if my general manager hears his voice and the suppleness of his brain, he might try and replace me with him. But it is Christopher Flannery. He is a senior fellow of the Claremont Institute and the author of the American Story podcast, among other things. Has an essay in the current issue of the Claremont Review of Books, His Spirit Abides, his being Abraham Lincoln's. And it gets us into an interesting discussion over a book review about Lincoln's speeches. Professor Flannery, welcome back to the show, and thanks for joining us.
Seth, good to be here.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. A colleague of yours, Diana Schaub, she writes a book, His Greatest Speeches, How Lincoln Moved the Nation. And she isolates a series of Abraham Lincoln's speeches. You see her book and you see Lincoln's speeches and worldview as a way to get us back to the less divided nation we once were and to help rediscover the American purpose and identity that people so often decry is absent from us. Do I have that roughly right? Do you want to take it from there for a moment with your thesis?
Yeah, that is right. You know, I don't write much about that specific thing in the review. I do mention it, but I do think it's true that Lincoln's principles, which were the principles of the American founding, they are really the only principles, the only grounds of civic friendship that Americans have, and they are perfectly adequate, more than adequate grounds for the civic friendship that we all want to have. And so it is true that a big point of Schaub's book on Lincoln's speeches is that he took a lot of pains to put his speeches into writing and to put writing into print so that those speeches could not only be read by his fellow citizens then, but could be read by future generations. And the reason was that he thought that his reasoning, his arguments, his principles were eternal. Mm-hmm. And especially for Americans, they really would be instructive to every generation. And I think that's true. I think Schaub thinks that, and I think that's true.
It comes to us, you know, when we're facing a lot of fronts attacking those notions, a lot of fronts. One would be knowing and understanding American history. Understanding it is separate from knowing it. Our kids don't know it. Our adults are distorting it. So we're distorting that which we don't know for a purpose, I suppose, that we can get into if you want. One might think of critical race theory. One might, obviously, as you write about in your essay, think about the 1619 project, right? That's certainly one thing. The other thing is this weird quest to make it worse, not better. I mean, I would argue that 1619 makes the problem worse. But in fact, I would also argue that the entire approach to teaching American history, particularly I'm talking at the elementary and secondary levels, Chris, the entire approach has been worse than lackluster in the sense that we are graduating students into a country they are alien to. You know, we can talk about illegal aliens and that problem, but we're making aliens of our own citizens. And then we stand back, men without chests like, and ask, how did we get here? How are we so divided? Why do we no longer have common threads, narratives, and communications about our own very country, right? I mean, that's part of the problem here, isn't it?
Yeah, that's well put, and it's tragic. And you're right. It's about both knowing and understanding, mm-hmm. and there's so much that our students, tragically, don't even know anymore. I mean, they have been, our young people have been denied membership, you could say, in the American community.
Nice.
Because they have denied knowledge of the history of their previous generations, and then understanding, which of course has to come with that. And Schaub's book is a lot about that. It's a very wise and good book. And one of the premises of it, and since we're talking about education,
yeah,
and education, I would say, is the central theme both of Lincoln's statesmanship,
right,
and of her book, is that these ideas that the American founders had, these ideas that animated Abraham Lincoln's statesmanship, are abstract truth applicable to all men at all times, mm-hmm, to use a Lincoln phrase.
Mm-hmm.
They are our great inheritance. And I think there is no greater duty and no greater achievement that our schools could achieve than to bring this inheritance in its fullness to our young people today. That's their most important work, and they have been worse than failing at it for a few generations of teachers now, and it's a tragedy.
Chris Flannery is our guest, Christopher Flannery from the Claremont Institute. Chris, how do I say this? I guess I would say the point I want to raise with you is this. For those that decry our divided nation, and I don't know, one nation, many cultures, the divisiveness, the bitter hatred, some people have called it a cold civil war. Maybe some people are wringing their hands about it turning into a civil war. It's odd to me that the immediate antidote to this, the immediate vaccine, to this would be restudying, relearning the one president who presided over and, you know, solved the problem of a civil war. That would seem a natural place to go, a natural person to try and understand and study. It's odd to me that he's on the chopping block, though, particularly among the left, a little bit on the right, but mostly the project of the left has put him on the chopping block, so much so that, I mean, even as I don't know that his second inaugural could even be posted or, you know, read in most classrooms in public schools in America today.
Yeah, and so that's a good description of how far we have gone down a bad road. But that's what we have to do. And so there are certainly, there are many private schools, there are parents who are, they have many other things to do with their own jobs and with their own, looking after their own children, but they now see that they've got to go get involved in their school boards because of what their children are learning. And as hard as that might be on millions of parents, good for them.
Mm-hmm.
They need to go out and take responsibility, and they need to make sure that what the teachers are teaching their children are these kinds of things. And that's pretty straightforward. Now, I mean, it's a big uphill fight, but that's really the issue. And the numbers, I mean, you know, it's 1619 versus 1776 is a simple way to sum it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do think that just in principle and even rhetorically and politically, that 1776 is a winner. We need to have leaders who will step forward and just say it that simply. We're giving American children a 1776 education. It's very straightforward. It means that we believe that all men are created equal. It means that we're all equal in the eyes of God and all that follows from that. And anybody who wants to offer a contrary education, no tax dollar should be spent certainly to support it. You know, I mean, so things like that, I think. That's what is happening, at the sort of school board level, school district level, and that's one of the big fights we're in. And I think there's reason for hope.
There is.
It's a big uphill fight.
I agree with you. At the local level, there's reason for hope. It's interesting, at the federal level, it's the almost near exact opposite, isn't it? One of the first things people say, one of the first things Joe Biden did was end our energy and independence. That's actually not true. One of the first things he did was take down the 1776 project from the White House websites and servers. I don't know if you noticed that. It was really odd. The day before his inauguration, you could go to government websites to read the 1776 report. The day of the inauguration, not after, of, you could no longer do that. It's an odd thing when you see the federal government actually weighing in that 1776 is the year not to be taught, or at least that contribution to scholarship.
Right. I did pay a lot of attention
Good.
To that.
Yeah.
And I think it's remarkable, You know, it was late in the day, but at the in his last weeks, months in office, Donald Trump issued those two executive orders. Mm-hmm. One was, hey, we're not going to be teaching critical race theory in any federal program or in any program that's contracts with the federal government. That's one thing. And the other thing is, we want a 1776 commission to look into what an American basis of education would be in this country. So toward the end of his 4 years, Trump grasped that really that essential element of the crisis that we're in. And, you know, issuing executive orders is a very inadequate, you know, instrument.
Sure.
But it's something, and it's evocative of what really needs to be done.
And the burden should be on those that want to take them down. And
exactly.
Let me do this, Chris. I got to take a quick commercial break, and this is a big impregnant thing. Can I have you reserve your comment for the other side of the break?
Absolutely.
I'm Seth Leibson. He's Christopher Flannery. Professor Flannery is a senior fellow at the Claremont Institute and a contributing editor at the Claremont Review of Books. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Professor Christopher Flannery, a contributing editor for the Claremont Review of Books, senior fellow at the Claremont Institute, is with us. We're talking about his recent essay in the Claremont Review, His Spirit Abides, his being Abraham Lincoln's. And it's a book review that advocates that we go back and study several of Lincoln's speeches, particularly many we talk about here often, the Lyceum, the Gettysburg Address, and Lincoln's second inaugural. Chris, we were just making the point before the break, and you had to just hold off on your full complement of thoughts there because of the commercial break, so I'll turn it back to you. But we were just heading into the break, and what we were talking about was, you know, of course, Donald Trump had instituted the 1776 Commission. I know about your involvement in it, of course, which I'm happy you were involved in it. But the first thing, really, the Biden administration did do, almost right out of George Orwell's 1984, is memory hole it and take it down. And we sit here as a society and ask, you know, we demand certain functions having removed the organs. Again, you're C.S. Lewis, right? We demand, you know, less divisiveness. We demand some kind of unity, some kind of fealty, not only to our country, but to one another. But we've castrated the herd and we're expecting the geldings be fruitful in a sense. But you take it in your phraseology or your analysis.
Yes, that's right. You can never go wrong with C.S. Lewis.
That's always a good starting point, right? Or
it
Lincoln.
Is.
But people tell us we are
Lincoln,
going wrong with Lincoln. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I do think that the division in the country, of course, we've got lots of challenges, but I do think the division can be accurately defined as a division between 1619 and 1776. That's a beginning point for understanding what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Biden's coming into office and immediately erasing from existence the 1776 commission and so on is a good expression of what the Democratic Party stands for. I think the Democratic Party and liberals in general in America and a fair portion of the Republican Party have to say they are people who are 1619 advocates. They think that the best way to understand America is through the prism that America is, as Joe Biden says, systemically racist, always and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And the alternative view, which should be the view of a ruling constitutional majority come the next election, is that, no, actually, America's principles are the only principles that can overcome racial divisiveness, racial oppression, ever or anywhere. And they are the principles that all men are created equal. That's the 1776 position.
Mm-hmm.
So Donald Trump grasped that. And Donald Trump's movement and coalition is that, I believe, at its core, as best, it is the 1776 movement.
Mm-hmm.
And 1776 principles need to be at the basis of all American public education. And it's straightforward. Now, that's a unifying position. Now, it's going to unify a ruling majority of Americans, which means it's going to divide them from those who disagree with that, who I would call, say, the 1619 Americans. Well, you have to make those divisions. And they are fundamental, and they go to the core of things. And that's why things in America feel so divisive today. It's because those two positions are radically incompatible, and which one of them comes to rule our country is of historic and really drastic significance. So the division is real, and the division is really significant, but what the country needs is to be united around the 1776 principles, which are really the principles of the founding and the principles of Abraham Lincoln.
We're talking to Chris Flannery. Chris, you just used the word radical. Let me take that word a little further with you. One of the interesting things we noted during the riots of 2020 was what kind of iconography was being destroyed. And we may or may not agree with it, but one certainly understands in that kind of fervor why maybe Confederate statues were on the chopping block. But then it became awfully curious to see Frederick Douglass and Abraham Lincoln statues being on the chopping block. In San Francisco, you saw the effort to try and rename schools with Abraham Lincoln's name on them. The taking away, the memory holding of Abraham Lincoln or Frederick Douglass, who I don't think is taught really very much in our schools anymore. It made me wonder, your use of the word radical, I want to run with it for a moment, Chris, made me wonder if the movement we're fighting, the leftist movement we're fighting, is so radical that what they show by their antipathy towards anything Lincoln, anything Frederick Douglass, is really that it's not a vision of America. It's not a Robert E. Lee vision versus a Lincoln vision. It's not, I don't know, you take your two. It's America that they don't like. It's anything America they don't like. I think we're facing a movement that radical. Am I overstating it?
No, you're understating
okay,
it, if
good.
I may say
good.
So. And so, you know, you remember, I mean, really, how long ago now? Really 40 years ago, you remember what sounded the sort of whimsically quaint chant up at Stanford University.
Hey, hey, hey.
ho, yeah. Western Civ has got to go.
Yeah.
And you think, okay, well, they're the students acting up, you know, all these wealthy Stanford kids, you know, they're not too threatening and blah, blah, blah. But so what this movement that is now dominant in our country, and this is the thing, it's not just that they're beating at the doors. The movement that controls every authoritative cultural, political, economic, social, education institution in America, they mean Western civilization has to go, reason has to go, European civilization, which is saying that Eurocentric thinking needs to go, America needs to go, God needs to go. So it's that radical. It's going to the roots of things. And that means that the only response to it has to be as radical, in the sense that radical comes from the Latin word for going to the root of things.
The root, right.
If we're going to save the country, we have to go to the root of things and stand for those things that these radicals want to destroy, which that's the division. And the good news is that the good cause is worth all of the devotion that anybody can bring to it, all of the thinking, the hard work, the hours that you need to spend going to the school board meetings, getting somebody elected, making the arguments. It's a cause that's worthy, in Lincoln's words, of the last full measure of devotion. That's the good news.
You said it beautifully. By the way, is your time up or do you have a little more time? Either way is fine. I can deal with it either way. But if you have more time, I could use you. It's up to you.
Yeah, I'm all yours.
Oh, great, because we're going to hit a break in a second. And I would love to pick your brain on this a little bit more, Chris Flannery, if I could. And maybe we think about this over the break. But what I'm so glad you did in your review at the Claremont Review of Books on this essay we're talking about is the reproduction of portions of Alexander Stephens' cornerstone speech. Because the one thing I have been trying to communicate to as many people as possible is that that 1619 Project view of our founding is not really new. And I don't know that they know it. That view did exist. It was the view of the Confederates. The Confederate view of the American founding is the 1619 view of the American founding, which is a very, very, very interesting thing that they may not even recognize. And, you know, attached to that is the notion that that view had an opposing view, and it was Lincoln and the Union. It was a bigger part of the population. It was a bigger part of the country. And we won. That view had its say and day and lost. it's a really odd thing that those who want to take down America or at least talk about America as systemically racist are citing the very history of the systemically racist side of America that lost in the Civil War. Can we pick up on that when we come back?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
I'm Seth Leibson. He's Chris Flannery. I love it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Dr. Christopher Flannery is our guest from the Claremont Institute and his piece in the Claremont Review of Books. Chris, the point I was making about 1619 Project CRT and all this kind of leftist view of American history is what's the Cummings line? The bud of the bud, the root of the root. It seems the root of the root of it is to me the fact that their history of America or their reading of the history of America is not particularly new. It had a strong voice. It's eerily similar, almost in many respects verbatim, of the Confederacy of America's view of the founding. You reproduce some of this in your essay. And it's as if the Civil War didn't happen. It's as if the majority of this country didn't prevail over that view in a crucible of war. And it's as if the lost cause version of the Civil War has become the chief cause of Nicole Hannah-Jones and the 1619 Project. I'll ask you again, am I overstating it?
No, once again.
Okay, good. I'm on a roll here. Okay.
Right. You are really on a roll. And we talked about the Alexander Stevens speech, you know,
right.
And if students who want to get a good education, there are so many American documents that are worthy of reading and thinking about, and they would give you an amazing civic education in themselves. This is one of them.
Uh-huh.
This is the speech. Alexander Stevens was the vice president of the Confederate States of America, and he gave this famous speech called the Cornerstone Speech in 1861. And in that speech, he articulated the whole cause of the Confederacy. And he did so by saying, you know, when those people back in 1776, Thomas Jefferson and those fellows, when they said that all men are created equal, they were just wrong.
Right.
They were dead wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally are establishing a government that is based on the true understanding of things,
mm-hmm.
which is that it's a government based on the understanding that slavery, subordination to the superior race, is the natural and normal condition of the black man in America.
Mm-hmm.
This is explicit. This is a speech our students can and should read today.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the great crisis of the American of American history. Why is it even a crisis? Because Thomas Jefferson and the other revolutionaries proclaimed that all men are created equal as the foundation of their revolution. And the 1619 Project doesn't seem quite able to recognize that. For them, America is 1619. It's slavery and racism in 1776. It's slavery and racism in 1787, it's slavery and racism in 1861. And the one thing that, 1865, when we are emancipating the slaves. But they don't seem to recognize that the real 1619 view is in 1861 with the Confederate States of
there
America.
Is. That's how to think about it. That's how to put it. I got to tell you, you probably read our mutual friend's introductory piece in the Claremont Review of Books, where he talks a little bit about Nicole Hannah-Jones. She grows up with a father who's a World War II vet, a black man who's a World War II vet who proudly displays the American flag in their front yard pristinely. And she has this line in one of her opening essays on the 1619 Project. She didn't learn how wrong he was until she went to school. She had to go to school to learn he was wrong. I mean, that isn't that the summation of everything we're talking about, too, right now?
Yeah. Well, as you know, I am one of the underlings who works with the eminent editor of the Claremont Review of Books.
For Charles the record, Kessler. Let us all stipulate we all work for Charles Kessler. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so in the course of that, of course, I read his writings in the internal workings of the operation and so on. And he and I had some back and forth about this because I thought he was more than generous to Nicole Hannah-Jones.
Yeah.
I thought that what she did to her father's memory was a desecration.
Yeah.
Now, this is not my business. I'm just, I don't know her father.
Right.
I don't know her personally, but I cannot, I really cannot imagine until someone can give me some evidence for it, that her father put that flag in their front yard every day for the reasons that she publicly said that he did.
Right.
Which reasons, I think, were a desecration of his memory.
I think that's perfectly reasonably stated.
Yeah, we had some internal, you know, editorial things about that. I was saying, Charles, you know, be hard.
Mm. The takeaway I want people to understand is you had a black man who fought in World War II, comes back to America, puts the flag in his front yard, takes exquisitely good care of it, and the daughter, who didn't experience the racism her dad did, by the way, obviously, by definition, her dad faced far more discrimination and challenges as a World War II vet, she learns in school her dad's wrong to hang that flag. I just think the entirety of our education problem, maybe our citizenship problem, is in that very story right there. I really do.
It is. That's right. And but what I was saying is that then what she learned in her essay, which is the famous essay inaugurating the 1619 Project, is that she then explains how she herself came to understand, in her words, her father. And she came to understand that her father was putting that flag up really for 1619 principles.
That doesn't parse for me either. That just doesn't parse for me. I don't think any World War II vet put a flag up when they came home for 1619 principles. I really just don't.
Yeah, there were there are great stories about black patriots in World War II, and just as you say, you know, there's so much discrimination in the armed forces themselves, not just in the country.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a great story about, I believe this one was about Jack Dempsey, somebody, actually not Jack Dempsey, Joe Lewis.
Joe Lewis,
somebody saying, you know, Joe, what are you doing, Joe? You know, you fight for your country and they won't even let you go in the restaurant over here. And he said, well, you know, America's got some problems. Adolf Hitler's not going to solve any of them.
Yeah, nicely put. Nicely put. No, I know. I know the World War II generation pretty well. My dad was one of them and faced, obviously, that discrimination. Had nothing but great patriotism for this country when he came back. And I have nothing but great admiration for you, Chris Flannery, for helping to reinstantiate that patriotism in this country as well. Thank you for everything you are and do, sir. Thank you.
Seth, it's been a pleasure. Really good to talk.
You betcha. Thanks. Chris Flannery. Check out the Claremont Review of Books, folks. ClaremontReviewOfBooks.com. Check out Chris Flannery's essay. Check out all he does, including, I mean, just a great contribution to our culture, his podcast, The American Story. I'm Seth Leibson, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.